Covering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets.
Hello, everybody, from a nightclub at the end of the world. Yeah, we've got a new song opening up tonight. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, with you on Sunday, the 26th of May, 2013. And boy, as I look at these dates fly by, I just, it's amazing how we're hanging on and wading our way through this. Sometimes it feels like we are moving at light speed through molasses or something like that. It's difficult. It's been a very tough week. But we have a new theme song tonight, Inner Reach. I think it's after 3 years or so of Avalanche and Earthquake. It was a great song from our first album, but that song fits a little more, and we're changing to face and hopefully deal with some of the realities that are around us tonight. I'm doing this show tonight for, if you will, the advanced students, for the ones who have been here for a while who get this, who have been following all the stuff that we've been doing for the past year. And I'm not going to do a long recap of how screwed up the world is out there. If you've been listening for any length of time to this show, you know that. I will assume and hold you responsible for being aware of that as we move through tonight's discussions. That's going to facilitate, I believe, hopefully what I'm going to try to do, which is open us up all a little bit. Just briefly, collapse in progress, and I'm so tired of, I've been diligently reporting this to you now for, 15 years or so, and certainly since 2000, 1999, 2000, at From the Wilderness, and I'm tired of bringing you these reports. It's hard to do that, but here's a quick update on collapse, and speaking of which, a bridge on I-5 collapsed outside of Seattle. Infrastructure failure, of course, that was well on the map, been warning about that for years. Had another one happen in Missouri. A parking garage collapsed in Bethesda with multiple fatalities. We have more reactors identified as being in trouble now, including Paducah in Kentucky. Riots in Stockholm, Sweden, more vigorous or as vigorous, and certainly longer than those in London in August of 2011, are now entering their seventh day. Police have asked for reinforcements. I'm not sure that fire is contained yet. And we've had a very grisly murder in Woolwich, England, where two Muslims ostensibly, reportedly, hacked a British soldier to death. And that's just your Boston event du jour. There's all kinds of major inconsistencies surfacing around the Woolwich murder, as they did around Boston, as they did around 9/11, as they did around the Murrah building in Oklahoma City, as they did around... This is not news. It shouldn't be a surprise to any of you. What is surprising to me is how quickly the snooper, whatever they call it, snooper bill in England is being rammed through. And, my attitude in dealing with these horrific events, these bloody events, these sensational events, is just, okay, here's another one. It's bloody. I'm not getting lost in the detail. I'm saying, okay, what's the immediate government follow-on? And clearly, fascist totalitarianism is just out of the closet and pursuing an agenda at an increasing speed. The pedal is to the metal. In the weather world, we've had massive tornadoes in Oklahoma, big ones. The tornado was rated as a Category 5, and it killed 24 people, including 7 children. Major devastation, major floods in San Antonio. Climate change continues unabated. Okay, so all of that's still there. Now hold that. That's just the situation report, the sit-rep. I had a Facebook friend, Andrew Stark, who commented on the Missouri bridge collapse. He said, "Hear the newest thing? That the oversized truck that hit the broken Skagit River Bridge on I-5 was commuting round trip from Vancouver. This is the Washington collapse. From Vancouver, BC to Vancouver, Washington. Get this: the big truck was part of the Canadian tar sands project, and people have been protesting the railway. So tar sands project goes via oversized trucks on Interstate 5." People have also been protesting how the interstate highways weren't built for these huge trucks from the tar sands. I heard this on Seattle's radio station, KEXP.org, Eat the State radio program. And he writes, until you change the way money works. Indeed. That's something I've been saying now for a decade. Solid. Now, what I get from that is that the energy scramble is absolutely frantic and desperate. Keystone is, this is not trying to keep, they are moving stuff around in ways that are dangerous, and they are trying, the powers that were, the people who run the infinite growth paradigm, and all who work with and support them, are in absolute desperation mode, and talk about taking risky maneuvers. I wish Matt Simmons were here. He'd have some choice comments on this. But it's Deepwater Horizon going after the fruit on the far edges of the limbs, and we're falling off all over the place, and we're causing more damage. 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, maybe it was last week, I used a quote from a good Facebook friend, Keith Markley, who's been to several of Tom Brown Jr.'s tracker schools. I say hi to Tom if he's out there listening, and any of his trackers or his great instructors. Keith wrote, "We crossed a point this past winter on the future pathways mentioned, where we moved into an acceleration of likely events. It has so accelerated that we have missed our opportunity to stop it. The branching out pathways before us now have more to do with adaptation and survival." Now this is where the shadows start to come up, and it's quite okay to feel, to feel that. As a matter of fact, it's good that you feel that and acknowledge that. This is that kind of a situation. So I'm going to try to teach, and we're going to have some great help from Graham Hancock and Joe Rogan in a moment. But I got to tell you a story. A long time ago, let's say it was Plato. We could even go back and say it was in Atlantis or any of the many major civilizations that have existed on this planet in eras before what we call 6,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago, whatever it was. I've always been great teachers, and there are still great teachers around. But let's say there was a guy like Plato, and he ran a school. And of course, it was a very select school, and only the best and brightest were accepted. And one day, the teacher, the prophet, if you will, went to the disciple who had been with him the longest, who was his right hand, and who was always busy caring for all the other students. And he went to his eldest disciple, and he said, "Today I'm going to give you the whole day. You have my undivided attention, you and you alone. What can I teach you about?" And the disciple was absolutely overjoyed with gratitude and love. And he thought, and he looked at the master and said, "Teach me about the truth." And the master just kind of nodded, a sagacious nod, grasshopper. And took the disciple by the hand, and then they happened to be near a beach, and they were walking along a beautiful beach, picture a nice, beautiful Greek beach, unpolluted. And it was calm waters, and the master took the disciple and walked him out to the water until they were chest deep. And the master took his head and gently pushed the student under the water. And the student, loving his master, eagerly complied. He said, "There's a lesson in here. Of course I'll go under the water." So the student went under the water. He's there for a while, 30 seconds and 45 seconds and about, 50 seconds or so. He starts running out of air and he starts indicating he'd like to stand up. The master pushes down and the student says, "Okay, this is about willpower. This is about discipline. This is about..." And so he hunkers down, and now we get to like a minute and 30 seconds, a minute and 40 seconds, and the students are ready to explode. Something has taken over. And just around 2 minutes, the student is kicking and clawing and grabbing at the master's testicles, doing anything he can. He fights and claws and breaks his way out of the water, gets this big breath of air, and he has this terror-stricken panic look in his face, and he looks at his master like, "What?" And the master looks at him very calmly and says, "When you need the truth as badly as you needed that breath of air, you will find it." That's the point. We are there now. I had some major reflections this week on my time in the Occupy movement. I was very involved in Occupy late 2011, from roughly September through whenever it ended. Deeply involved in Occupy Santa Rosa, which was a sister and very closely connected to Occupy Oakland, and there were a lot of spillover events. And I was talking to people like Dave DeGraw, a lot of people in the Occupy movement, sharing ideas. And you remember at the start of the Occupy movement, when they said, what do you want? And the press was trying to hammer to get a list of demands, and Occupy wisely didn't. But then you would listen to all the things that people were talking about that they were so convinced needed to be done. End the Federal Reserve, repeal Glass-Steagall, and all of these lists of demands. I just sat there because, man, I've been your scout now for over three decades. I've been the scout for the two-leggeds, and I have just said, you know... And I just looked at all this stuff at Occupy, and I said, Occupy was such a perfect event. It had the perfect energy. But they couldn't get a list of demands. And I just said to myself throughout the course of Occupy, I don't even have to argue with this, because every day that passes, the list of demands is going to get shorter and shorter and shorter and more focused. Anybody care about Glass-Steagall now? Anybody care about, you know, I mean, even the Fed, that's not going to reverse all of these conditions that are extant in the world right now. We are coming down to a demand, which is we want to live, and my observation says, and my life experience says, we are being murdered, and we want to live. We have to stop the people that are killing and or threatening us. We have to stop. We have to address those. We have to face those shadows. But the first thing we have to do then is to face and accept the fact that our lives, your life, my life, are in imminent danger. It's a scary place to be. I was a cop. You know, I've had all this, you know, macho life, and I've faced that. And I'll tell you, everybody gets scared. But it's not until we understand how imminent our death is that we become, if you will, open to an altered state of consciousness. Now, we're going to play a short little clip right up here front. It's not very long at all, but this week, Joe Rogan had on Graham Hancock. And of course, you know that I'm just totally ecstatic about that. I just love these two guys and their conversation. Was magic. It was 2.5 hours. It's Joe Rogan podcast number 360 from the Joe Rogan Experience. It's on YouTube. It's certainly linked from Graham Hancock's pages. It's all over the place. And it was just amazing to watch these two men who I consider to be spiritual men or prototypical men for men in a new age of human consciousness. And I just love these two guys to pieces. Here's the comment I put. But this is now coming back into the shadow theme, which emerges from, actually it's coming from all directions right now. But I wrote that I feel woefully inadequate to express my love and gratitude for these two men, both of whom I know. I wept because as I watched, I saw real men being role models for other men in their fallibility, in their humanness, in their humility, and in their incredible intellectual courage. Joe Rogan and Graham Hancock are prototypes of what it means to be a man. Just as the divine feminine must be healed, so must the divine masculine. Men like us are doing something that must be done. We do it with our lives and our walks. We are expressing possibilities. As Charles Eisenstein might say, we are offering the possibility of a different story. Very powerful. Is it any surprise that I spent 2.5 hours not only agreeing with, but vibrating with every word that was spoken? My neck is sore from nodding my head in agreement. Do yourself a big favor, especially if you're a male. Watch that podcast, listen to that podcast, and hear these two guys just be good men. We need a few of those. So what I'm going to do is, now we've kind of hit upon the shadow thing, and for the past year, if you've been with me and you've been following, you understand that I have been clearly painting a picture that says the darkest things that we have to face are within ourselves. And it is what is within ourselves that prevent us from seeing and responding to a reality. We'll call that the shadow. But here's just about a one-minute clip as Joe and Graham were talking about the ayahuasca experience, and they make a really good point. You can roll the clip.
Can and frequently do include painful moments when you come to realization of actually who you are and what you are. It's absolutely fundamental with ayahuasca is what I call the life review, where you see the impact of your behavior on others, which previously you had insulated yourself from. And when you see the pain you'd caused, you might have felt perfectly justified at the time. When you see it, and you see it with that clarity, it makes you strongly motivated not to do that again.
Yeah.
So it's a very important learning experience. They call them plant teachers. They call them teachers in the Amazon.
That aspect, that learning from your past mistake aspects, exists in a lot of psychedelics. It's a core factor of psychedelics.
I would say it's a core factor of all psychedelics.
And I always felt like it's really ironic that law enforcement works against psychedelics, because nothing would benefit law enforcement more than psychedelics.
Absolutely.
If psychedelics were legal, there'd be so many less crimes. First of all, the drug crimes be out the door, and then it would be a matter of how many people are on mushrooms going to rob your house. How about
this? I'm not sure what happened there. The volume got very, very soft. I hope you were all able to hear that. But what Graham and Joe were talking about is an experience I have shared with them, now having done ayahuasca as well, from the ayahuasca and the DMT, to experience a state of consciousness in which you become aware of other greater realities and you are forced to make a life review. That was the key line there from Graham Hancock. So this is coming from many different directions. Facing things we don't want to face, things that we conveniently make ourselves, don't make ourselves, we don't consciously do it. Somebody else in talking about shadows, a guy named Michael Sarian, who I'm not very familiar with, but he did an excellent little clip on facing shadows that I saw on YouTube. He talks about denial and then denial of denial, which is a hard thing to penetrate, but circumstances do that. And this is a point where I'm leading to a specific issue, just one of many. It's a shadow. But all of us are, to one degree or another, afraid of death. We are afraid of a painful death. We are afraid of all of those things. Now, that's just one example of many shadows. But now I want to take that energy, that awareness, because there's a key to all of this with how we approach the situation that we are faced with now. Mussolini, I started using this quote in 2001, fascism should more properly be called corporatism, because it is the perfect merger of power between the corporation and the state. We are witnessing that now full speed. A couple of shows ago, maybe last week or the week before, I reported how there are major trade laws between the U.S. and Europe, where Barack Obama is pushing, that would give corporations the same standing as nation states, would give corporations the right to sue city and state and county governments. A lot of that, sadly, is already in place, and it's being used to bully people with fracking. But this is totally out of it's goose-stepping in public now. We got some very disturbing things to share with you about water. Now, you can live, the conventional rule is 3 days, but if you do a vision quest, it's 4 or 5 days, but that's a different story. But you can't live very long without water. You can live 3 weeks without food, maybe 3 minutes without oxygen, 3 or 4 minutes. But let's look at some of the stuff about water. One article that appeared this week was from Peak Oil News and Message Boards. The Colorado River, this is the title, dated May 24th. The Colorado River, the High Plains Aquifer, and the entire western half of the United States are rapidly drying up. A very good, professional, detailed article. Peak Oil is by no means careless or sloppy. They do a major. But here's the lead. What is life going to look like as our precious water resources become increasingly strained and the western half of the United States becomes bone dry? Science tells us that the 20th century was the wettest century in the western half of the country in 1,000 years, and now things appear to be reverting to their normal historical patterns. Well, we got some drought issues. But we have built teeming cities in the desert, such as Phoenix and Las Vegas, that support millions of people. Cities all over the Southwest continue to grow, even as the Colorado River, Lake Mead, and the High Plains Aquifer System run dry. A very long article, very detailed, very chilling. But this fits into a mosaic, if you will, of other stories. Independent in Britain today had a story, not today, also on the 24th, major story in their news and science section. Lack of fresh water could hit half of the world's population by 2050. Well, we all heard with regards to peak oil that there was enough oil to get us through to 2030, 2040, 2050. Those dates are always lied about. But that, too, was a very detailed and frightening article. When you combine that with, now I'm building to make this more and more urgent. I'm kind of closing the circle on you here. Roll with me on this, because we have to go into the inner circle of hell before we can find out. Or as Winston Churchill said, if you find yourself in the middle of hell, keep going. Yes. combined with all of this, I posted something, and I have to make excuse me, a real salute to trueactivist.com, www.trueactivist.com. You really want to go there and watch this. Now, the interview is in German with subtitles, but the interview was with Nestle CEO Peter Brabeck in Switzerland. He is German, and he speaks the German, and his face kind of reminded me perhaps of Goebbels or someone like that in the old days. Yeah, but here's some quotes. But the article is titled absolutely correctly. Nestle CEO says water is not a human right and should be privatized. Now, Nestle is the largest food corporation in the world. They use abundant genetically modified organisms, and they sell $65 billion worldwide each year. They have 275,000 employees, and they are the 27th largest company in the world. So here's what this guy sat at a desk and tried to tell us with a straight face. And the guy, I'm telling you, is a psychotic, psychopath, deluded. I've seen looks on serial killers, and I was involved in a couple of cases with LAPD. I didn't make the big arrest, but I've seen them, and I've watched how they behave, and mass murderers. He writes, this was one of the first things he said, man is now in a position to provide some balance to nature. Are you laughing? I mean, all the imbalance here is because of us. And yet he says we are still firmly in control. We still have dominion. Then he goes into a long diatribe on how organic is bad for you. He says organic is not best. These are all quotes. He says, after 15 years of GM products in the USA, not one single case of illness has occurred from eating them to date. It's hypocrisy. Organic food is more than anything else. Are you rolling with me? Are you getting angry yet? Are you shocked? Then he says, water is, of course, the most important raw material we have today in the world. It's a question of whether we should privatize the normal water supply for the population. The one opinion which I think is extreme is represented by the NGOs who bang on declaring water a public right. That means, as a human being, you should have a right to water. He says that is an extreme solution. And the other view says that water is a foodstuff like any other, and like any other foodstuff, it should have a market value. Then he says, personally, I believe it is better to give foodstuff a value, so we are all aware that it has its price and that one should take specific measures for the part of the population that has no access to this water, and there are many different possibilities here. I'm still of the opinion that the biggest social responsibility of any CEO is to maintain and ensure the successful and profitable future of his enterprise. For only if we can ensure our continued long-term existence will we be in a position to actively participate in the solution of the problems that exist in the world. Hey, assholes, you're the guys who created all the problems in the world. Sorry, I had to ad-lib. We're in a position, he says, of being able to create jobs. He cites numbers to say that 4.5 million people worldwide are dependent upon Nestle for jobs or food when families are counted. And then he concludes, and with that, we've got to create a positive image of the world for people, and I see absolutely no reason why we shouldn't be positive about the future. We've never had it so good. We've never had so much money. We've never been so healthy. We have never lived so long as we do today. We have everything we want, and still we go around as if we're mourning for something. And at the end, he goes through this automated factory. The Japanese, you see how modern these factories are, highly robotized, almost no people. He brags about how many employees, and then he brags about how the Japanese are helping to get rid of him. Now, you have listened to those actual quotes from the CEO of the 27th largest company in the world. Would you trust that guy? Would you turn your back on that guy? Would you let him babysit your child? Okay, the guy is a killer. All right? Now, let's hold there for a minute, because I'm getting to a place where hopefully we can find our way through this. It's going to take a little courage, but I'm with you. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here on the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. We will be back right after these messages.
Verse of the lie, the one that holds you down and keeps you paralyzed. By now you know the last and first name of the one. Big Brother wraps your fear and burns a shadow.
Okay, I guess we're back. That was short faded, but we'll work this out. Hi, this is Michael Rupert, Tracker of Truth, back on the Lifeboat Hour with you here on PRN. All right, so this week it was there was a story that passed also that China destroyed three shipments of genetically modified corn from the U.S., and this is after, you know, we've had the so-called March Against Monsanto this week at this holiday. And you know, great. It didn't do any good. It didn't shake the world. And if everybody's content with feeling better, and you actually think you have weeks or months to do a couple more of these, and maybe something might happen out of that, you're refusing to face your shadows. Your lives are in danger. You have to try different tactics. And boy, we're going to get a classic example of that tonight. But China destroyed three shipments of GMO foods, and we've seen GMO crops outlawed in quite a few countries now. And yet, they're becoming rapidly ubiquitous here. They are permeating, if you will, the food drawers of this country. And I wrote this on Facebook because this is an observation. It's a question. It's a what if that I've been writing about since 2002 or 2003 when I started using the great graph that Colin Campbell gave me of world population and understanding that a die-off was inevitable. Way back, I wrote this on Facebook. Way back in 2003, I started asking questions. One of the big ones started with, it is not possible that the powers that be, that's what they were then, I still believe they're the powers that were, because I'm not going to be satisfied with anything less than their own death. It's not possible that the people running this world do not know that a population overshoot has occurred and that there will be a mass die-off. The important question then, since the die-off is an arithmetic certainty, how will it be managed? Who will decide? My position at the time, and it still is at this point, that every human being in the world should be apprised of this situation and should be involved. But that's obviously not the case. But having arrived at that and being absolutely certain in 2003 that all leaders of every country understood clearly what was coming, and here it is, so I then asked, will it be that each nation and those who rule it will make their own choices within the nation about how to kill their own people and reduce their own populations? You guys are smart. Take this and run with it. Think about it, because what do we see happening? The U.S. is number one. We're fracking ourselves to death, destroying fresh water, and we're going to get to some scary stuff about that in a minute. We are poisoning our environment. We are also consuming massive quantities of genetically modified foods, which are poisonous, Nestle right there at the forefront. And that's a way that our population might go. In China, we're seeing all kinds of emergent diseases. And I strongly suspect that there is a serious agenda being followed and aggressively pursued now to bring about that die-off. The infinite growth paradigm, those who have run it understand that on this dimension, on this planet, within three dimensions, the Richard Heinberg's book, The Party's Over. Now the question is how to make money on the way up and on the way down. And I really believe that some of those choices are being made for us. Now, I've only got one song for us tonight, but it's Bob Marley, so it's worth it. We have to come to something that happened this week in Boulder, Colorado, May 21st, where the Boulder County Council just steamrolled, and there's a video of this which you can find on YouTube, Boulder Fracking. It's on my Facebook page, and if you just go to YouTube and enter Boulder Fracking, you can watch this. Now, this is important because everyone's life is in danger, and all of us are being affected by the decisions made by state, local government, in a legal system that's already hopelessly corrupt. But I had this horrible sinking feeling of lambs to a slaughter. I have many friends in Boulder, and I thought they were better prepared than this. But if you want to understand how decisions are going to be made when it comes time to decide whether you live or whether you die, this is the way they're going to be made, and this is the way they're going to play out. So I'm going to ask the board now to roll. This is about a 5.5-minute board hearing in which the Boulder County Commission voted to start fracking next to elementary schools. Listen to this. Picture this happening in your community. Let's go.
Please.
So what?
For the people.
I'm going to turn to you.
Not the money.
You know, folks.
For your experiment. You won't even allow us to vote on it.
Extend it. Just extend it. Yay.
This is a pressure. You know,
Kim, I think we're ready to. Are we ready to speak to the other options with us?
Where does it say?
So, hey, folks.
We can't
be able to talk.
Where does it say
it
can't extend?
What is the harm? The money?
Where does it say we can't extend it?
These are our health. These are our lives.
We have been through.
You're temporary commissioners. Temporary.
We have been through the litigation discussions with our county attorney's team. I have confidence.
Litigation doesn't hurt my kid.
You have not gone through the health impact.
It's about the health and well-being.
That's
of our community.
That's what you just said. Exactly.
Money shouldn't be the bottom line.
Let's have the talk with the lawyers.
Are the communities as important as the road?
You know, folks, we really need to finish.
Finish
the discussion.
Same folder!
So if we're not able to discuss, we're not able to move on from our current regulations, which we would really like to do, I would like to make a motion that we consider text amendments to the current regulations and that they address the possibility of increased setbacks as needed, the possibility of geographic dispersion, and include, not in those text regulations, but the necessity just to bring it up to the fore that we would need to have in place before we allowed anything, inspectors that would be qualified, hired, and on the ground, and also technical experts on the ground and be able to review any applications that we might have in place, that those hiring pieces needed to happen before anything was allowed to go forward.
No!
Helpful recommendations. Elise, if you have any thoughts.
Yeah.
You can test our blood for ethylbenzene in a year.
So folks, if you guys finish the conversation, I know you all feel strongly about this, and it looks like the choice that you all wanted isn't going to be where we land. I like to think it takes some skill to be a county commissioner. Matt isn't one of them. Yeah, to be able to count to two, we don't have the votes for moratorium extension. So I will second the phasing approach. While it's not a full timeout, to study all public health impacts. There's a huge difference between 10 wells and 1,000 wells. Almost done.
The roads are worthwhile of a moratorium. The public health is not. We get the message.
This is our money. You're not using it to protect us or the environment.
I think we have to acknowledge that phasing and allowing a few wells that are at least better than 1,800 all at once.
A little bit of poison.
Please.
Okay, it's better than all of it.
No! It's not better. It's a cop-out.
Kim, let me ask you a quick question. You've heard the recommendations. You've heard the recommendations to look at some options around the land use regulations. Will you be able to, do you think you'd be able to put that together in a short time frame?
Well, obviously the money
and
the natural gas is more important than
Kim?
I think staff, Kim Sando is planning division manager in the land use department. Staff will be prepared to research and draft text amendments per your direction. We can try to do so before the June 10th moratorium. Otherwise, we would need authorization to extend.
Okay, so you can. In the time frame. Okay. There's been a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
That was chilling. Now, if you believe that the people yelling and expressing their displeasure at the end accomplished anything, stay away from me. Don't come near me. Don't try to convince me that that does any good. Starting the first week in June, three fracking wells are going to be set up next to the Niwot, the Gun Barrel, and the B.C. Erie Elementary Schools in the middle of the family neighborhoods, and seven other wells are ready to begin operations. That's an act of murder. That's an act of direct violence. I have been at this for so long. I mean, I was a protest during Iran-Contra, and I was certainly in all the protests after CIA and drugs and for all before the Iraq War, and I just cannot stand people anymore who believe that that's the only option that they have, because I can tell you the cynical bastards running things create the space and let the children have their tantrum, but they still get their way. And if we are going to fight, we have to fight better than that. We have to get out of boxes that we are trapped in. But in order to get out of those boxes, those comfort zones, we must recognize that our lives are in imminent danger. Solutions don't become available until we reach that point. So I put a link up, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. We've had Tom from there on the show twice in the first year of the show. They've actually made some progress in fracking cases, but it takes time and money. And we don't have a lot of time, and nobody's got a lot of money left. So we need other ways to fight. And to me, it came down to a question of, well, people would automatically fight different if they understood that their lives were in danger. We're facing near-term extinction here. And clearly, we see how many people are going to die in the U.S. The water tables are disappearing because it takes like 194 gallons of fresh water to make 1 gallon of ethanol. It takes like 2,000 gallons of fresh water to frack 1 gallon of what they call shale oil. which they have to heat to a third the temperature of the sun, it takes tens and tens of millions of gallons of fresh water are being used to make tar sands. That's why the Great Lakes are draining. And then they want to poison what's left. So I was not afraid. I looked up the definition of self-defense, and I'm just asking this question because what does it take to wake people up? Now, the legal definition of the right of self-defense, according to U.S. law, also called when it's applied to the defense of another, like a child, a neighbor, somebody you step in for, it's called alter ego defense, defense of others, defense of a third person, is the right for civilians acting on their own behalf to engage in a level of violence called reasonable force or defensive force for the sake of defending one's own life or the lives of others, including, in certain circumstances, the use of deadly force. Now, I don't know what's going to take, and I am not, and I'm sure the FBI is listening, and Homeland Security, and, you know, hi, guys, hi, everybody. I don't want to see it come to that, but you have to be, if you are logical, you have to realize that at some point people will act in self-defense, but usually, as we saw in the case with Occupy, with everything else that I've been telling you guys for 30 years through my whole career, you need to act on this stuff now, and we didn't. That's what Keith Markley said. We have passed the chances to do all the stuff that people are still trying to do now. And I know that this has to do with shadows. I know that this has to do with the fact that people deny denial. That people do not want to face the fact that they are scared for their lives, they're scared for their children's lives, they're afraid of very these are shadows, and there's many kinds of shadows we have to face, but this is a really big one. And so this set up, I had a beautiful, beautiful exchange of letters with a very, very dear friend of mine, Arrow, this week. And I love her to pieces, and I miss her. I miss her so much. And she wrote me this beautiful, long, loving letter, and she was talking about being aware, as we've talked about here, of a fifth dimensional consciousness, where if you, you know, live and manifest love, and so the law of attraction is horribly flawed, it's been missold. And she was encouraging me to focus on the light and the love and the vibration. And it really moved me. I just felt the love, but I couldn't agree with her position, because I don't agree that if we just sit here and vibrate love, everything will be fine. We've heard that. And plus, I've had 30 years of walking a spiritual, mystical path, 21 of which were, as you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, living a dedicated 12-step program, which required inventory. As you recall, Graham Hancock and Joe Rogan talking about a life review, being slammed in the face with the shit you never bothered to clean up. And it's part of all mystical paths. And so when I wrote back to my dear friend Arrow, this is what I said to her, and this has to do with facing shadows. I said, here's my understanding. There is a place of understanding, knowing, accepting, and grieving over the fact that one's death is here and now. It is an essential part of the evolution process. As a warrior, I know that all warriors fight better when they believe that they are already dead and have processed that. In The Art of War, Sun Tzu said it clearly, I'm paraphrasing, if you want to make a small outnumbered army achieve the impossible, then deliberately put it in a position where there is no other choice but to win or die. No escape routes, backs to the wall, trapped. That's when miracles happen. It's true in war. It's true in, you know, I've seen it so many times. It worked with me several times when I was near death and my life was in danger. I just said, I'm already dead, let's go. And somehow I was still there. It works. It transforms people facing shadows. I've experienced it, and I've taught it. Graham Hancock's got a new book called War God. It's a novel, but, you know, he makes an eloquent point. Hernando Cortez scuttled four ships, and he had 490 men. He scuttled his ships when he was facing an army of 200,000 Aztecs. That's happened many, many times. Now, it's the perception of where you are, and it's the reality of where you are that liberates you if you can handle it. So let's call that point A. I'm going to die. My life's in imminent danger. I don't know whether it's going to be climate collapse. I don't know whether it's going to be radiation. I don't know whether it's going to be drought, but, you know, or civil unrest, war, whatever. But I've accepted that, and I know that my life is in danger. And once I know that my life is in danger, I am freed, as the law just said, to take other options that are not available. Now, I'm not advocating violence. The metaphorical point that I'm trying to make is that it's once you get in that position that you start to try things you would never have considered otherwise. Now, although, you know, I'm pretty sure at some point somebody will... this is not a great leap of imagination. Again, I'm not advocating it. Somebody will pick up a rifle and shoot some fracking people. And I think the self-defense would be a good defense in court, assuming, of course, that the courts were functioning. Now, there's another point that I'll call point B, and this is the point that I hold in my heart, and this is the point that I've also been trying to teach about. This is the point where we want to go. And I describe it, that is a point where consciousness has evolved to living in and radiating and manifesting pure love. Call it home. It's a place I hold in my heart. That's where I know I'm going. I'm evolving to. The hitch is that you have to go through point A to get to point B, and you are not going to get to point B, this fantasy land, unless and until you are willing to face your shadows and your fears and to do things differently than you have done and to find crawling in desperation that creativity, that innovation to find tactics, new things that will work. And again, we use escalation of force at LAPD. When I was taught there, you know, you build up. But we are at that point. We're dying. What have we got to lose? Our lives are on the line. And I wrote to my dear friend. I said, I have every confidence in the outcome, long term. And my beloved sister, we will, if nothing else, see each other again in that place after we go through. I never promised you a rose garden. I pointed to where we have been going, and these are the lessons that are being hammered home. We have to fight to achieve the new consciousness. Remember the story that I told you about the prophet and the disciple. Now I'm going to play a song, and this is appropriate, because if anybody thinks of Bob Marley and Dreads and Rastaman, I love Bob Marley. We think of him as really just the most peaceful, peace-loving guy in the world, who would not harm anybody, and who carried the message of peace and love. Well, here's a song he recorded. It's called I Shot the Sheriff.
For the life
Bob Marley, thank you for all that you brought to us. There's a message there, and that's you have to get to some places before other things can happen. And right now, if you're scared, I'm scared shitless. If you're scared, touch it, feel it. It won't kill you. Acknowledge it. Contemplate your own death. Contemplate and hold in your consciousness the stuff around you. I want to read you a very short quote before I sign off. This is from darkmountain.net. darkmountain.net. The eight principles of some of the best writing that I've read. Very quickly, they write, and so we find ourselves, all of us together, poised, trembling on the edge of a change so massive that we have no way of gauging it. None of us knows where to look, but all of us know not to look down. Secretly, we think we are all doomed. Even the politicians think this, even the environmentalists. Some of us deal with it by going shopping. Some deal with it by hoping it is true. Some give up in despair. Some work frantically to try and fend off the coming storm. Our question is, what would happen if we looked down? Would it be as bad as we imagine? What might we see? Could it even be good for us? We believe it is time to look down. Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I love you. I will be with you again next week here on the Lifeblood Hour. Good night.